Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
It's time for your favorite show. The Weekend Report is on the radio.
Oh yeah, the Weekend Report is on your radio, and thank you for listening to it. Tony Colombo here with my partner Chris Arps.
Hi, Tony.
Carl Middleman.
Hey.
Our producer is here as well, and if you've been listening to 97.1 over this holiday break, do not adjust your radio. We are here again. Yeah. Yesterday, Chris Arps hosted the Annie Fry Show.
They were desperate.
And I was he was nice enough to have me sit with him for the entire show, and Carl produced that show as well. So it was like the Weekend Report on a Friday.
Which is technically the weekend, isn't it?
I guess.
Yeah, okay.
And but now, you know, it was Black Friday, or as Chris called it,
Friday!
Yay!
How's that, Carl?
We told the joke right. Carl's been trying to get days. Chris to tell that joke for 2 days. It was a great show, and if you missed it, you can always check out the podcast, absolutely free.
It's Chris, too late for the rewind, though.
You can no longer do the do the radio rewind on the radio.com app, but you can go and check out that podcast. It was a great time yesterday, had a lot of great guests, and in fact, because of how many great guests and the great discussions that we had, we are going to, in today's show, replay a couple of the moments from yesterday's Annie Fry show that Chris was hosting and I was a part of. We talked to Jim Gwinner, we talked to former Speaker of the House Tim Jones, and many others. Kind of had a roundtable discussion on a lot of the issues that are happening right now. So we're going to replay some of those segments as we go along today and sort of expand on those conversations.
And especially the interview we had with Greg Keller with the controversial slot machines. Audience can rehear that.
Absolutely. Very, very interesting discussion there. And that's kind of what we're going to do here today. It's going to be a little bit different than the normal Weekend Report. We are not going to have a bunch of guests. We are not going to play the Weird News Challenge. We're going to basically just do our week in review segment for the entire show. So we're going to dive into some serious topics, and we're going to have, it's the holiday weekend, and so we're going to talk about a lot of lighter topics as well.
And I think we would have had to pay Skip and Trish time and a half
and
to come
why,
in on the holiday weekend. Right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, and that's why I, because all that money comes directly out of my wallet.
There you go.
And so that's why we are not having them in today. But we have got plenty to do, plenty to talk about. And like I said, we are going to go back and revisit some of those discussions that we had yesterday when Chris was hosting the Annie Fry Show. One thing that I need to remind you of, we just touched on it, but if you want to go back and check out that entire episode of the Annie Fry Show, or any episode of the Annie Fry Show, or any episode of any of the shows on this radio station, you can download the radio.com app. It's absolutely free. You can actually download our podcasts in many, many places, but the best place to do it is the radio.com app, because it basically gives you one-stop shopping for everything here at the radio station. You download the app, you favorite 97.1 FM talk, and then you can stream the station and listen live to it 24/7. You can, Carl mentioned just now, the Radio Rewind feature, brand new feature that you can actually rewind live radio that you're listening to there on the app. So if you are listening to an interview and you don't want to wait for the podcast, or you just want to maybe you misheard something, or you're like, what did that person just say? You know, you can just quickly rewind. In fact, up to 24 hours, you can rewind live radio just like you were watching your television, your DVR at home. When you rewind your television, you can now do that with the radio on the radio.com app. And like I mentioned, you can download all of the podcasts from all of the shows here, and all of it is free. So go and check out that radio.com app if you haven't done so already. So, like I said, we're going to dive into a whole bunch of topics today as we look back at sort of the week that was and go through a bunch of issues. I wanted to start with something that, Chris, you and I talked about. We had a chance to briefly touch on this on the Dave Glover Show earlier this week when you were in with us on that show, but we ran out of time, and I kind of wanted to expand that discussion here, and that is the situation with these two separate polls that have come out from Rasmussen and from Emerson that shows that Donald Trump is surging with the black vote nationwide, that he is gaining massive ground with black voters. Both polls show that Trump has the support of 34% of black vote across the country, which, if true, is unheard of. And we've talked many times on this show about the power of the black vote. Right. We've had Burgess Owens on, you know, and had this discussion with him many times. And we've talked about if Republicans could just get 20% of the black vote, how much a game changer that would be. And to see these numbers and to see it from two separate polls, right, not just one poll that you could say, well, that was a fluke, that's an outlier, that doesn't really count. Two polls that have basically shown the same numbers, that President Trump has 34% support of black voters is crazy. Are you buying it? Are you, do you think that this poll is true? And if so, why is this happening?
If it would have just been the Rasmussen report, I would have seen it as an outlier. Rasmussen has lost a little of its luster since their founder, Scott Rasmussen, was drummed out of his own company a few years ago.
Yeah.
And also Rasmussen tends to skew heavily, not heavily, but skew in terms of Republicans. But with this other poll saying the exact same thing, almost
Emerson,
of 33%, I think that it could possibly be true. And Tony, I think what's fueling this surge of support for the president is the illegal immigration border wall issue. I really do think that's what's fueling it.
Mm-hmm.
I've told this story many times that when I was in Texas in 2016 for a family reunion, that my two aunts, who were very hardcore Democrats, were showing some favoritism towards Donald Trump. And part of that was because of the illegal immigrant issue.
Somebody's probably wondering why would black voters care more about the border wall than anyone else?
Mm-hmm.
Why would that be such an important topic when it comes to our issue, when it comes to the black vote?
Well, I think it's a broader issue. They feel that a party that they've been supremely loyal to for the past 50 years, giving 94-95% of their vote, is kind of taking them for granted. If you look at the past few election cycles, all of the emphasis seems to be on Hispanic Americans,
yeah,
either when it comes to Dreamers,
and immigrants,
if it comes to people that are in this country illegally and trying to legalize them. So I think that is what's resonating with African Americans. I think that, like I said before, because of my aunt in Texas is an administrator, and she saw where they were having to pay extra money for bilingual tutors and bilingual things of that nature. And I think just the African American electorate, a big part of them, 34%, says that this is just not fair.
So essentially all the sweet talk that the Democratic Party has given the black community over years and decades, over the past several decades, of, you know, saying that we are the ones that have your back, we're the only ones working in your best interest, we're the ones that are trying to fight for equality, you know, all of these, all of this attention and love and sweet talk, really,
sure,
that the Democrats have given the black voters over all these years. People are now seeing all of that same sweet talk being directed at the Latino vote and the and immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
And now black voters are sitting here saying, well, you're not even paying attention to us right. anymore. And not only are you not paying attention to us anymore, but you also never did any of the right. things that right. you said you were going to do.
Right.
And so that's why a lot, in your opinion, mm-hmm. I guess, and I will co-sign sure. that a lot of these, that a lot of black voters are starting to become disenfranchised with the Democratic Party.
I think they are, and there was a very interesting segment on Meet the Press last weekend. They call it Data Download, where they look in the numbers. And these numbers are just startling polling numbers that it said that 50% of African-American Democrats identify themselves as conservative or moderate, and only 18% consider themselves liberal. So I think that's such a wide open opportunity for the Republicans to do outreach. And if 57% of African Americans consider themselves conservative or moderate, you can see them having a problem
yeah.
with people not following the rule of law and illegal immigrants getting benefits. So there's just a wide open opportunity there. It's just that the Republican brand is so bad that African Americans would rather vote against their interests than vote for Republicans.
Right, right. Yeah, and why the Republican brand is so bad is an entirely different discussion, whether it's their own fault, which it certainly is, mm-hmm. and to some extent. You know, there's also a lot of lies that have been told by the Democrats over the years, at least in my opinion.
I'd say, Tony, it's about 60-40. 40%, I would say, is just self-inflicted. The other 60% is, well, I don't know.
Yeah, just Democrats.
Just Democrats,
being
exactly.
better at,
exactly.
At lying,
yep.
at wooing
exactly.
that community. So, as I mentioned earlier, we've talked many times on this show about the power of the black vote and you, how you don't even need to, speaking from the perspective of the Republican Party from a national viewpoint, that you don't even need to get a majority of the black vote. You just need to get maybe 20%, and that would be such a shift that it would be a game changer. So pretending,
yeah.
assuming that these polls are correct or even anywhere close to correct.
Mm-hmm.
If Donald Trump or anybody running, you know, nationally on the Republican side, if they can get anywhere close to 34% yeah. of the black vote, is that something that the Democratic Party can overcome, or is that just game over?
They can overcome it, and they can't. The only way that I can see them overcoming it is what we see in a lot of jurisdictions, which they say is absolutely crazy, but you have illegal people voting. That's the only way they could overcome that. But if Republicans ever got 20% of the black vote, Democrats would be hard-pressed yeah. to win a lot of elections in this country.
This is a huge story, in my opinion, mm-hmm. and it's another example of when I was trying to find details about mm-hmm. these two polls and trying to get some information right. about these stories— and I'm Googling it, almost no information is coming up.
Imagine that. And I would think that they would
it is like buried.
And they criticized Rasmussen, so I'm surprised that they didn't just totally dog Rasmussen yeah. out. But because it's two polls saying the exact yeah. same numbers.
How is this not a story? How is this not a bigger national story? I don't know.
Well, you know why.
Well,
they don't want that out. They don't want
right.
that. They don't want that information
yeah.
out.
No, you're right. Changing topics, but along the same lines, another situation that we've had a chance to touch on earlier this week, but not really delve into, and that is the situation with Barack Obama, who has always been the messiah of the Democratic Party, the patron saint, the greatest man that ever lived.
You need one more. One more yeah, adjective. Come
right.
on.
The greatest man that ever lived. I think that's good enough.
yeah, I guess so.
he recently called out Democrats for challenged their calls to tear down the system. Obama warned Democratic presidential hopefuls to pay attention to what voters actually think, saying, most people don't want to tear down the system. And voters, including many Democrats, quote, just don't want to see all that crazy stuff. And everybody, and I think rightfully so, is interpreting when he says that many voters don't want to see all that crazy stuff. He's talking about the extreme left platforms that many of the Democratic frontrunners have, like free everything,
right.
Free health care, free education, $15, now $20 minimum wage, and he's warning against that. And this is Barack Obama,
yeah.
And he's just getting buried. Outrage was directed at him by many people on the left, including Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, who said, it sparked this whole hashtag too far
right.
left movement on Twitter and social media, where because Obama's warning was essentially don't go too far left, and all of these liberal pundits and politicians and celebrities are all embracing this call and revolting against him saying don't go too far left. They're saying no, we are too
right.
far left, and saying things like Ilhan Omar tweeted out, being too far left means I believe healthcare is a human right. I believe future generations should live on a healthy planet. Being too far left means I believe all student debt should be canceled. Being too far left means minimum wage should be $15. Being too far left means lives depend on gun reform and all these other things. And that's just one person. And there's more than just Ilhan Omar that have spoken out against this. But and I could go on, but mm-hmm. but you get the point. And so, you know, here is Barack Obama, the great Barack Obama, giving what I feel is very sound advice mm-hmm. to the Democratic presidential candidates, saying, hey, be careful not to alienate yourself and go too far left. And they're just trashing him
yep.
for it.
You know, my late political mentor, State Representative Sherman Parker, had a saying that he would say often, and that is play chess, not checkers. And I honestly feel that that's what Barack Obama is doing in this situation. He's playing chess, not checkers. Barack Obama is just as left wing as these candidates, but he knows that that's not going to sell to middle America. You have to be a wolf in sheep's clothing. If you remember during the campaign, and because they wanted him to win, it didn't get a lot of publicity. But Barack Obama said if a coal company wants to build a new coal plant, they can do it. They're just going to be put out of business. It's going to cost so much.
Hmm.
Barack Obama said, and they didn't publicize that much because they wanted him to be president, said that gas is going to have to be $5 a gallon so that we can get people out of their cars. So I think Barack Obama is just saying, hey, guys, I'm a black man who won the presidency twice, so I may kind of know what I'm doing. This far left-wing agenda that you're putting out there just can't win.
Yeah, but they don't want to hear it.
No, they don't.
They don't want to hear it.
Because they live in bubbles.
Yeah.
They think everybody believes like that.
And he's got to be shaking his head, because I agree with you.
Yeah.
I think he is that type of person.
Oh,
you got to run to the middle.
Time.
You got to run to the middle, change, you know, try to flip some moderate
yep.
voters, and then you can govern however you want to govern. So he's got to be shaking his head going, listen, you idiots,
yeah.
I'm on your side.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you, this is how to win an election. Mm-hmm. And instead of listening
yep.
to Barack Obama, he's now, you know, part of the problem because he's not liberal enough.
And they live in that bubble. Remember what I said on Andy's show yesterday is a lot of the Democrats after Nixon's landslide election were devastated because they were saying, I don't know how he won. Nobody I knew voted for him.
Right.
And it's kind of the same thing with these
right.
people. They live in a bubble, and they
yeah.
have convinced themselves that that the whole country is left of center like they are.
Yeah, absolutely. Great point. We have to take a break. We've got plenty more Weekend Report coming your way. Keep it right here. You're listening to 97.1 FM Talk. Report 97.1 97.1 FM Talk. Tony Colombo, Chris Arps, and Carl Middleman here. We're here today, and we were here yesterday. As we mentioned earlier, Chris Arps filled in for Annie on the Annie Fry Show, and we had a very interesting roundtable discussion with Jim Gwinner and Tim Jones, of course, one of the hosts of the Tim Jones Show here on 97.1, former Missouri Speaker of the House. We covered a lot of issues that are currently happening in the news, and so we're going to bring you a little piece of that discussion right now. Here's our roundtable discussion from yesterday's Annie Fry Show with myself and Chris Arps and Jim Gwinner and Tim Jones.
This is Chris Arps, and as I teased all show, we've got the speaker.
I'm
Tim
in the
Jones.
House.
How are you?
Sucker off.
The hardest
one. The evil one crept up and slipped away with her.
I got all kinds of things
here.
Oh,
bad and bougie.
The hardest working man at Intercom today. He hosted the Mark Cox Show. He's on the Annie Fry Show, and then he'll be going to our sister station in about a half hour doing the Reardon Roundtable.
Yeah, then they're going to haul me out back and throw me in the dumpster because I'll be used up. How you guys doing? Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Merry Christmas, yeah, we can say now.
That's right. Exactly. I see Tony's putting the tree up over there.
Yeah, putting up the studio tree.
Oh, and is that really, a secret?
It's okay. A little Charlie.
No, not at all. He really looks like he's enjoying while he's doing it.
No, that is not
it.
A secret. No, it's not a secret. It's ready to go.
You're making me nervous, though, Tony. Now I got to go home and start doing stuff. Oh,
I know.
It's like way too fast. It's like it's December 1st on Sunday. It's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Speaker, as you know, Tony and I co-host a show on Saturdays called The Weekend Report.
Yes.
And there's a segment that we do in there called The Weekend Review.
Okay.
And we basically go over the top news stories of the week. And since you're here and Tony's here and I'm here, we thought we'd just kind of recreate that on the Annie Fry Show.
Fantastic.
Jim's here too, sir.
And Jim, I'm sorry. I am here.
We're going to need more microphones.
I'm going to zing Jim here. Jim's here because there's no use watching the Mizzou game this afternoon.
We got it on.
It comes on shortly, man. I'll give you score updates.
Okay, very good.
First thing I want to get into is the national scene with impeachment and the president and all of that. Well, mainly the Democrats, which I think they are coming apart. You're starting to see a lot of disarray. You're starting to see, and I got an article here, I think it's from Newsweek, where they are starting to throw out the censure word instead of impeachment. You remember earlier this week, there was a black congresswoman from Ohio, I think, who basically let that cat out of the bag. Mm-hmm. And you're starting to hear that starting to come out. So the odds-on favorite has been the Republicans have gone, or Democrats have gone too far to stop impeachment. This is a train that's on the tracks, can't be stopped. What do you think, Mr. Speaker?
Well, this all started last Sunday when Adam Schiff was on Meet the Press or Chris Wallace. He was on one of those shows, and he was asked directly that very question. So, when are you going to have the impeachment vote? And I couldn't believe my ears. He was backpedaling furiously in refusing to say that it was going to happen. And this is California Adam Schiff, the guy who's been running the Soviet-style star chamber for the last several months. He said, you know, I thought this was hilarious. I have to go home and see what my constituents have to say. You know, in California, right? What are they going to say? They're going to say, hang him high, right?
Exactly.
I mean, they've been wanting to get rid of Trump out there, you know, since before the day he took the oath. But so
it's 2015.
I thought that was very interesting that it started with Adam Schiff. And then you're exactly right, Chris. Throughout the week, we've had this drip, drip, drip of various random people backing up. And you're talking about a Michigan congresswoman from a plus 30 D district. You're talking other congresspeople from very safe. So if the safe people in the safe districts, and I think they did that on purpose to test the waters, are saying this, what do you think all of these congresspeople in these Trump won 2016 districts are hearing all weekend long as they're home in their home districts at the coffee shops, doing a little Christmas shopping, at all these festivals that we have going on? What do you think they're hearing? They're hearing, what have you all done this year other than hate on this president? Look, a lot of us get upset about some of the personality style. I think some of it's very entertaining. But, you know, I know a lot of people are dissuaded by the style, but it's hard to argue against the policy, especially when your 401k is about twice the value it was a couple of years ago. You've got a job. You've got opportunities. Your wages are rising. And we're in a relative peace, a period of peace and prosperity.
Can you explain the difference between a censure and an impeachment? Like, what are the
Well, we censured Maria Chappelle Nadal a couple years ago here in the Missouri General Assembly. It's a slap on the wrist. Okay. It can be everything from a slap on the wrist to you could have your committees. Well, they can't take anything away from the president.
Right,
so if you were in the legislature, they could take your committees away. Okay, I think they did this to Peter King on the Republican side.
Yes, they did.
You can take your committees away. You can take your assignments away. You can do things like that. With the president, though, because of the co-equal branches of government, a censure is going to simply be a slap on the wrist.
Yeah.
But you know what? If they can get that vote and it's high enough, they'll all vote for it. And then Nancy Pelosi can declare victory and ride off in the sunset. They'll spin it into something else. Mm-hmm. I think they're very worried about this IG report that's coming, despite the spin you're hearing from the New York Times. And I think they're very worried about the fact that they forgot that after an impeachment, the whole the kit and caboodle goes to the Senate, which is run by Republicans, mm-hmm. where Chief Justice Roberts is going to sit in the chair, where the five 2020 Senate Democrat presidential hopefuls would have to come in and sit in that Senate gallery with their mouths zipped and their hands in their lap and sit there through Iowa, maybe New Hampshire, maybe South Carolina. While we bring in Joe and Hunter Biden to talk about Ukraine and the Burisma issue, I think they're all like, oh, we didn't really mean to go this far. We just thought this would be kind of score some political points, but they didn't move the meter, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Best case scenario for them is that everybody's opinion before impeachment hearing began is the same as after.
I want to take this opportunity to have this discussion with all of you guys in the room as we're kind of doing this week in review style thing. Something that I find fascinating. We've been talking about the election and talking about the damaged candidates. We're talking last hour about, you know, these Democratic candidates running for president and how they are eating their own and how, you know, we don't even, I personally can't see any of them beating Donald Trump. The first time I heard this idea was a couple weeks ago on the Dave Glover Show think tank. Alvin Reed, who is a Democrat, said that he does not believe that the person who will be the Democratic nominee for president is even running yet, or at least not among the front runners. I'd never heard that. I thought it was fascinating when he said it. And then since then, over the last couple of weeks, I've heard more and more political pundits say that. Jim, what I want to hear everybody's opinion. Yeah. What are the chances? Do you think there's any chance that the guy who wins the presidential nomination on the Democratic side is not even running yet, or at least not one of the front runners yet?
As far as the front runners, I think that's a very good possibility. I don't think you've seen you're seeing Buttigieg pop up now in the Iowa the Iowa polls, but you don't want to be the number one person in the Iowa caucus in December on December 1 when the caucus is 4 or 5 months away. That's a long campaign cycle. For those of us that have ever worked on campaigns, ran on campaigns, I think I'm less inclined to believe somebody like a Bloomberg who just got in.
Yeah.
He may run as an independent, which could give a whole nother dynamic to an election.
Yeah.
But I don't think the U.S. senator who hasn't announced yet is going to come back in. Or I don't know if I think Hillary's going to jump in or not. I really don't see that.
The idea is that it's so ripe right now that these candidates are so weak that it's perfect timing for somebody to ride in on their white horse, save the day, and steal the nomination.
But whoever that person is, the Democrats' main problem is, and we talked about this last hour, they need somebody that can reunite all of their different factions. And the only person that I can see that is either Oprah Winfrey or Michelle Obama that can unite the super left-wing loonies with the moderates, with everyone else. Who else is out there that can unite all their different factions?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's
besides those two.
That's exactly right. The Democrats do not have the right person running right now that can beat Trump, and the wrong people keep getting in the race.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact that another 70 plus year old wealthy old white guy, Michael Bloomberg, is going to save the day is just not going to work. And I'm gonna pull rank on Lewis Reed. I don't know if you guys just saw this today. The founder of BET, Robert Johnson. Did you have that article?
I got the story. I haven't done it yet, but go ahead.
He just said that President Trump is slated to win in 2020. The Democrats don't have anyone to beat him because they've gone full throttle nuts.
Yeah.
That's the founder of BET.
Mm-hmm. Barack Obama basically threw Joe Biden under the bus.
So, I mean, they're searching for something that doesn't exist right now. Your point, Chris, is valid that Oprah or, I don't think Hillary,
Michelle
Oprah
Obama.
Or Michelle could give him a run. But at this point, it's getting really late in the game. Mm-hmm. A lot of the deadlines have now already passed to file in some of these states.
So do you think we even see anybody try to swoop in?
I think that after Iowa and New Hampshire, and no one is really broken out. I mean, people are kind of dogging out Bloomberg, but it's really a good strategy. If after the first four contests, no one really stands out, then, you know, the Democratic electorate will be like, well, we don't really see anybody we like. Maybe Bloomberg, and he can going to wash the airwaves with money. So, I mean, it could be a good strategy for him.
Right.
Yeah. May not work. I don't know.
Saw an article that was a great analysis about why Democrats are infuriated at Bloomberg. Is they're worried that because he's got so much money to spend, he's going to trash all the candidates in all these other states, but he himself won't be popular enough to win. So he's going to harm the whole field, but yet not be good enough to win himself. So all he's going to do is do damage to everyone.
Totally. That's Mr. Speaker Tim Jones. We're going to be back with more of the, what are we calling this, Tony? Weekend Review?
Weekend Report Roundtable. Yeah.
We're going to get into some stuff where I think the Democratic field is going to start to winnow out. And I've got some articles here that I think show that. You're listening to the Annie Fry Show. This is Chris Sarps on Black Friday on 97.1 FM Talk.
Welcome back to the Weekend Report, 97.1 FM Talk. Got one more segment to go in this hour before we bring you a whole second hour of the Weekend Report. Got more issues that we want to dive into coming up in that second hour. Right now, though, we're going to bring you the second half of our roundtable discussion that we had yesterday. Chris Sarps was filling in for Annie on the Annie Fry Show, and I was co-hosting that show with him, and we were talking to Jim Gwinner, and we were talking to former Missouri Speaker of the House Tim Jones, and going through a lot of the issues that are happening right now. And so we're going to bring you the second part of that discussion right now. This is from yesterday, roundtable discussion with myself, Chris Sarps, Tim Jones, and Jim Gwinner. Here it is.
Just so the audience knows, Tony, go. You're fine, Tony. Tony is hard at work putting together the studio Christmas tree. He's really, really getting into that.
It's been my job for years to be the person that either hangs lights or puts the tree up in the studio at Christmas time. And so I am doing my job.
You do it very well.
Thank you.
And as I said, we've got Tony, Jim Gwinner, Mr. Speaker, Carl Middleman. We're going to get back into the Weekend Report, Weekend Review. I got it straight. Mr. Speaker, and since you are the official attorney for 97.1, our attorney.
Today I am. I'm the only one in the room right now.
Exactly, We want to get into a little bit about this $20 million verdict.
Don't tell Dave Glover that.
I forgot.
Only one in the room right now.
Yeah, he doesn't. He says he doesn't practice.
Yeah, I'm recovering as well.
There you go.
Dave himself will say he was not a good lawyer.
He's been recovering longer than I have been. Yes.
I want to get into this $20 million verdict. You know, I thought that this was over. That hey, he's won. He's going to get his money by a matter of time before he gets his check. And there's a controversy with the strategy that county lawyers are using to get this overturned, I guess. Can you explain or go into that a little bit for us?
So there's a lot of complicated issues here, and without knowing all the legal background, I can definitely provide you basically kind of a general, like what generally happens after a jury verdict.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after a jury verdict, a lot of people think, well, that's, like you said, that's the end of the story. No, that's not true. In every legal case, when the judge or jury makes a decision, here in the state of Missouri, you have a certain period of time to file post-trial motions.
Right.
So you can file post-trial motions up to 30 to 40 days. They don't let you take forever. You got to make your mind. You got to make a decision pretty quickly to contest that verdict or that judgment by the judge. And you can make it under a lot of grounds. I looked at the article really quickly, and Chris, they're making an argument for a new trial. So their post-trial motion, the counties representing the police department, they want a new trial because they said that the plaintiff's attorney for the police officer made an improper argument to the jury based on current law in the state of Missouri that you could not recover under the Missouri Human Rights Act because sexual orientation is not a protected class.
Now, before you go forward,
yes,
the judge knows that. He's an attorney. He knows the law. Why didn't the judge stop that
attorney to be a judge?
Well, why didn't he? Wasn't this stopped then?
I don't know what instructions the judge gave the jury. The judge may have instructed them properly. Mm. And if the judge did instruct, despite whatever the plaintiff's attorney said in their closing argument, you get a lot of latitude in your closing arguments, you know, your Perry Mason style closing arguments. You can get pretty dramatic. Right. As long as the judge gave the proper jury instructions to the jury and they based their decision on that, and a reasonable person could not decide that they did not, this verdict is going to be upheld.
So outside looking in, what I think the answer to that question is, we've seen around the country these types of cases where LGBTQ or something is attached to a law that they don't necessarily, the law wasn't written for them like this law in Missouri. And it's just that the judges are, they don't want to be the guy, they don't want to be the person that makes a stand and looks like they're somehow against a class of people. And so they just kind of let it go, let it ride, because they don't want to be the ones that make it look like they're, you know, anti-LGBTQ. So they just kind of let this go because they don't want their next election not go their way.
Or they know if it goes higher, it's just going to get shut down anyway.
Yeah. But back to my original point, though, there's a lot of causes of action that are put into a theory of a case, okay? And just because the attorneys for the county are saying that you can't give an award under the Missouri Human Rights Act for sexual orientation protection because it doesn't exist there, that doesn't mean that the judge necessarily gave the wrong instructions under some other legal theory by which this officer recovered this money, okay? Mm-hmm. So it really depends on how the judge instructed the jury to apply the facts to the law that he gave them. Now, what I think could happen, and maybe they filed this post-trial motion as well, I thought I heard that they did, the amount of the award could get reduced. And there may be a very good legal argument that, okay, this young man was aggrieved, he had a good cause of action, if the case was proper and it's not going to get overturned on the issue that they're making as to the legal theory, but was the award just simply beyond the pale? You know, maybe he still gets millions of dollars, but maybe he doesn't get $29 million. So
that was Tony's big problem. Like, $20 million.
Yeah, they still could do it. It's called remittiture. They still could remit or reduce the judgment. So there's a lot of legal maneuvering going on after this massive verdict, and they're trying to find a way out of it or to reduce the pain in some way.
He's still showing up to work every day.
There you go.
I want to talk about an issue, Mr. Speaker, that I'm sure gave you plenty of headaches when you were in the legislature, and that is Medicaid.
Yes.
There is something that's on the ballot next year to, I guess, give Medicaid to everyone. Or expand it.
Medicaid.
I knew that Medicaid took a big part of the budget, but until I read this article, I didn't know.
Gazillions of dollars.
Our budget, Missouri's budget, is $33 billion, and Medicaid is $11 billion.
It's a third of the budget.
That's incredible. First of all, do you think voters will pass this in a referendum? I know we saw Clean Missouri. Anything can happen. But what will we do if this is passed? We can't afford this.
So let's go back many, many, many years when Jim Gwinner and I were young pups running around pretending to we might get in politics someday.
When the budget was $11 billion.
Yeah. Governor Matt Blunt. Matt Blunt was governor, and Matt Blunt stood in the gap with a brand new Republican legislature, and they did massive Medicaid reform. Right. People were shackling themselves to the doors of the Missouri House and Senate, chaining themselves, and Matt Blunt was derided by all of our favorite people over at the Post Disgrace every day, and he was the worst governor ever. And you know what he did? He saved the state of Missouri over $1 billion that would have been carved out of our education budget or whatever other budget. And so they did reform. The left hated it. Ever since then, they've been trying to put that money back in. And I just said no during my term there. We said no to Medicaid expansion. Mm-hmm. We've said no to Medicaid expansion for almost a decade under the new Obamacare law. Now they're trying to do it by the ballot. Now, it will pass, as it has in every other state, unless Missourians, who are very frugal people, right? We're very small C, even the Democrats in the state, especially the independents. We have rejected every tax increase, every nickel, dime, penny, quarter for cigarette. Even cigarette taxes get shot down. If Missourians understand that this will raise their taxes and will blow holes in the budget, I think they could reject it. But we're also compassionate people in Missouri. And if they see on the ballot, hey, free health care for everybody, and it's not really explained to them where it's going to come from, people will vote yes.
Yep. Now, I want to talk about an issue that is very dear to Jim Gwinner's heart. Jim is the past alumni president of the Mizzou. Did I get that right? Mizzou Alumni Association.
Yep. There you go.
And Mizzou is in a little trouble with the NCAA. I think they've gotten a completely raw deal. But, Jim, tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so a little bit more than a year ago, the NCAA came out, and Mizzou self-reported an infraction where a student was taking some tests for, I think it was about a dozen student-athletes that were from the football, the baseball, and I think women's softball programs.
Yep.
And the NCAA came down with this list of infractions, including scholarship reductions, limited recruitment visits, and a bowl ban, specifically a postseason ban for those three sports, including this year, although I'm not sure it's going to matter.
take it this year.
But it looked like it was going to matter big time.
Before the Wyoming game, it sure looked like it mattered.
Is that the first game of the season?
It was. That was the first game. And I'm a huge Mizzou. I mean, I'm first kid in my family to get over to college. I love Mizzou. I'm proof conservatives can come out of a large state institution of higher education. I love the place. I love everything about Mizzou. But this was a raw deal. You look at Mississippi State, the infractions they committed, the violations that they admitted to, the penalties that the NCAA gave. This was a complete misapplication of justice by the NCAA. It was arbitrary. I'm not sure if I don't know what the word capricious means, Tim.
I think it applies here. Okay, well, it applies here, Jim.
You said something.
I always thought Jim was a lawyer.
No.
Yeah. Sounds like one.
No.
Yeah.
You said something key at the very beginning of your statement. Is that Mizzou self-reported.
They did.
And in the past, with these NCAA rule breakers, for lack of a better term, obviously, if an institution turns themselves in and does their own investigation, that's taken into account by the NCAA and usually will result in a lesser punishment. And it didn't seem like that applied for Mizzou for some reason.
It seemed like Mizzou self-reported.
Yeah, they did everything right after they found out about the rule breaking.
So once they self-reported, and this decision came out, and then the appeal and the denial of the appeal came out. What this is telling institutions of higher education across the country now is, one, don't cooperate with the NCAA, don't self-report.
Right.
We saw State Senator Caleb Rowden put a very, very well-versed letter out Thursday or Friday, the day after the announcement came out. I think the ban came out Monday, so Tuesday the letter came out. A lot of people are reaching out to the NCAA, expressing their opinion. They are saying, that just the frustration. And there's a lot of words I can't use on the air.
Did the NCAA ever say why it took so long? Also, that was a ridiculous part
of the beginning of the year.
This lack of a decision.
They could have done nothing like they just did 6 months ago. They could have given clarity to the institution, because this is not affecting the students who had someone take the tests several years ago. This is affecting those student athletes on campus now. This is affecting the football players who had nothing to do with this infraction, the baseball players, the softball players. This is harming those students. And I look at those other institutions. This just exemplifies what the problems are with the NCAA.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm speaking on my own behalf, not as part of an organization, but there's a lot of frustration amongst the Mizzou boosters around the state. I think you're gonna see potentially somebody introduce legislation this session. But there's a lot of frustration that goes beyond just the first game and the 6th through the 10th games this season. Well, not counting the 5 wins.
We've talked about impeachment. We've talked about all kind of issues. I think that's the most animated Jim has been today talking about.
An important thing for people to know about this story is that it does not affect the basketball team.
Yes.
So if people are wondering about NCAA tournament or if the basketball team, this is football, baseball, and softball. Yeah. The basketball team is not included in this NCAA system.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Tony. Thank you, Carl. You're listening to the Annie Fry Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
It's time for your favorite show. The Weekend Report is on.
All right.
I think Perry will mind that.
When he's in next week, you can ask him.
That's a great point. Welcome back to the Weekend Report. Hour number two is on your radio. Tony Colombo here with my partner Chris Arps and producer Carl Middleman.
Hello.
If you missed any of that first hour, don't forget you can always download our podcast. Or if you're listening on the app, you can use the Radio Rewind. Just rewind and listen to it. Again, Chris hosted Annie's show, the Annie Fry Show, yesterday Friday.
And no, it was Black Friday.
Black Friday.
But to Chris, it was just Friday.
Just Friday. Carl, that's my line.
Yeah, no, you can't tell it.
It's my line.
You did steal it. You gave him the joke, and
then
now
he takes it back.
He's finally figured out how to tell it.
And he takes it back.
You gotta let him tell it.
Chris, yesterday was Friday.
No.
Damn it.
Now you can't.
Now you are.
Chris,
all right, we're moving on.
So yesterday was Black Friday, but for you?
Friday.
All right.
What do you think? Good timing?
No. That one was a good one.
It's not funny. It's not funny at all.
Tim Comby's in trouble, man.
So, it was funny.
He's safe.
Yesterday.
Yesterday,
right.
Exactly.
When you didn't tell it on the air.
So on Black Friday, Chris hosted Annie's show, and I was in with him for the entire show.
Carrying me.
Produced that show, and we had a great roundtable discussion with Jim Gwinner and Speaker Tim Jones and all that. Yeah, and so we just got a chance to replay some of that roundtable discussion. And if you missed it, you can go and download our podcast or hit the Radio Rewind button and check that out in the first hour of this show. Got another interesting topic coming up in the next segment, again from yesterday's show, where we had a chance to talk about the new controversy surrounding these video slot machines that are being put in at places, all bars and gas stations and convenience stores across the state of Missouri. And there is some controversy surrounding whether or not those are legal or not. So we are going to talk about that coming up in the next segment. Right now, kind of want to dive back into the week in review. Oh, I do want to promote this. We're going to talk about this a little bit more later on the hour. Later on in the hour, we're going to get into this a little bit deeper. But I just want to remind people that we have a brand new feature here on the Week in Report. Carl Middleman, our producer, who, as you may or may not know, is a member of the St. Louis Film Critics Association.
I am.
And has been reviewing movies on this station for a very, very long
time. Since 2007.
Yeah. I've got a question for
as,
you, too.
Yeah, as part of Max on Movies and the Entertainment Rundown and shows like that and the history of this station. And so we're going to take advantage of having Carl here on this show and take advantage of him being a part of the St. Louis Film Critics Association. And we are going to do weekly movie reviews on our YouTube channel. So 97.1 has a YouTube channel, of course, and we have a Weekend Report playlist on that channel that we put videos on all the time. And you can see the latest video all the time on our website, 971talk.com/weekendreport. You can just go to our website, and right there on our page is a YouTube video player with the most recent video that we have put on the Weekend Report playlist. And right now you can go and check out our very first movie review with Carl Middleman. And we're going to be doing this every single week. So along with, we're not going to stop any of the other videos, any of the other video content that we were putting up there before. This is just a new thing that we're going to also be doing on the webpage, 971talk.com/weekendreport. So make sure you check that out every week. And we came out of the box this week with a big one, a double review, which is not going to be what we normally do, but we wanted to, you know, make a big splash with this first one.
17 minutes long.
Yeah, we did Frozen 2 and It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, the Mr. Rogers movie. So, yeah, we'll talk a little bit. We'll do a little mini
review.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. But make sure you make a habit of that before you head out and go to the movies and spend your hard-earned money on that. Make sure you check out Carl's movie review every week at 971talk.com/weekendreport. And he'll tell you what movies are worth it and what movies aren't worth it.
I have a question that I have wanted to ask a movie reviewer for years. And this is all seriousness.
All right.
You know, movies is art, and art is
subjective.
Art is subjective.
Mm-hmm.
What makes your opinions about a movie, why should I listen to them? Why are they valid? What makes your opinions valid?
Because I have studied film.
Okay.
And what you have to remember, Chris, that—
And I'm serious about this.
I'm serious, too. Every film is somebody's favorite movie. no matter how good or bad you think it is,
never thought of that,
almost like. Every, let's say almost, yeah. because, you know, there's some exception sure. that'll prove the rule. Almost every movie is somebody's favorite movie. A movie that you hate, your least favorite movie, and you have this discussion with people right. all the time. That's my favorite movie of all time. Mm-hmm. And it's because movies are emotional. It's because maybe your parents were getting divorced and they put that movie on right. and you watched this and to escape. And so I'm just pulling that out yeah. of my head. But mm-hmm. you might say Ernest Saves Christmas is a horrible, horrible film. But I guarantee that is somebody's favorite right. movie.
So can a movie stylistically or artistically be a good movie, but it's not entertaining?
Yeah.
Can they be, you know?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, the last Star Wars movie was beautiful. It was. I mean, see? Visually it was yeah. beautiful, but it was a horrible
now,
movie.
For that reason, would you go see Rian Johnson's Knives Out?
No.
Which is a murder mystery.
No, I'm done with everything Rian Johnson.
Okay. See?
I'm done with Star Wars.
And
oh, Tony.
But he also knows. He also knows mm-mm. that first of all, Star Wars movies are children's movies. They're made for 12-year-olds.
Tell my wife that.
No, but you can still appreciate it. You can still like it. But a Star Wars, there will be kids out right now that are 12 years old that Last Jedi will be their favorite movie.
Yeah.
And it will be.
If you don't think that Star Wars is a kid's movie,
you're wrong.
Go to any Target and walk into the toy
kids
section.
Mm-hmm.
And you will see that it is a kid's movie because of all of the marketing and mm-hmm. toys yep. that they have.
And it's interesting you say that movie is for 12-year-olds.
It is.
Because Star Wars came out in 77.
And how old
And
were
I was
you?
11.
Uh-huh. I was 6.
I was 11.
I was 6.
So, yeah,
but
that,
I was
that makes
advanced
sense.
For my...
yeah, and just because it's made for that doesn't mean that
yeah.
that adults don't still love that stuff.
Tony's going to see Frozen this weekend.
Exactly, yeah.
So, one more question. I'm sorry, Tony, but I've always wanted to ask about this stuff.
Anybody can be a film critic.
Okay.
Anybody can have an appreciation of film. And my opinion is not any more valid than your opinion.
Yeah,
or anyone's.
Before you ask, yeah. I will say this about the movie review that Carl does. He doesn't just say, this movie's bad. I think this movie's bad,
right.
so don't go see it. He
tells you why.
Analyzes
yeah.
the movie. No, and really just says, this is what it's about, and this is what you may like about it or you may not like about it, and kind of lets you make up your own mind. You know, he'll tell you, like, it's this kind of movie, or here's what you need to know about
this movie. If you like the
first
one, you'll like this
one. And then
one.
You can make your decision based on, you know, him saying, here's what type of movie this is, or here's the things to look out for, or here's... And we let you make up your own mind. It's not hey,
here's
this movie's great. I think this movie's great,
if you
or I think
Gone
this
with
movie's
the wind,
bad.
You'll
has there been a movie, Carl, that has been universally loved, everybody loved it, but the critics just hated it?
Yes.
Every comic book movie.
well, yes, every comic
Besides
book movie.
Besides Black Panther.
You could say that... the Fast and the Furious series.
I've never seen one.
But see,
desire.
That's why
Transformers.
Exactly. Movies that are. Some people hate Titanic.
Never seen it.
What?
Yeah, I know. I'm probably the only person on the planet.
That's not true. That's not true. There's a lot of who wants to see. You know how it ends.
yeah. Basically.
Why would you waste 3 hours to go yeah. see that? Yeah.
The ship
all right, sorry to digress
you know
there, but I've
no,
always been interested in movie critics and what qualifies for your opinion to be any better than anyone else's. And
all you just
that.
Have to remember is any movie is somebody's favorite or least favorite movie. Mm-hmm. Let me throw that in there. It
yeah.
could be a movie you love. I guarantee there's somebody out there that hates it.
Yeah. Yep. And we'll talk a little bit more about Frozen 2 and It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood specifically. A little bit later on in the show, and don't forget to go and check out the movie review. It's up now, 971talk.com/weekendreport or on the 971 YouTube channel. and we're going to do it every
what?
Week.
What are you
Because I'm like,
now?
even though Tom Hanks is a great actor and everything he is
He's
in is
so
good.
So good as Mr. Rogers.
I just can't imagine, like, hey, Becky, let's go to see Mr. Rogers tonight. We'll go see a movie and get drinks and just make a night of it.
Here's
I just
a little
can't...
teaser. Here's a little teaser. The movie is not even what you think it is.
I'm not expecting them to be a Mr. Rogers episode or anything.
No, it's not. It's not even. It's not even what you think it is.
Yeah, okay.
It's the
trailers are misleading.
The marketing for the movie has been very misleading. It's not a Mr. Rogers. It's not the story of Mr. Rogers like everybody thinks it is.
So it's not one of those stories where
we're
going to
do it later.
Okay.
We're going to
okay.
We'll talk.
Don't talk.
I can get me going on this.
Get back in your lane.
Okay.
We'll talk about
it. Let's do it. Get back in your lane.
We'll talk about it a little bit later, but there's your tease.
Yes. Get back in my lane.
The Mr. Rogers movie is not about Mr. Rogers.
Okay.
Mm-mm.
Even though it's called Mr. Rogers.
No. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, it is.
Yep, yep. If, as Carl said in the review, if Tom Hanks were to be nominated for an Oscar for this movie, he would be nominated for Best Supporting Actor because Mr. Rogers is a supporting role in this movie.
Oh,
he is not the
you
star.
You really teased it.
I know. Okay. So we'll get into that a little bit later on. And if you can, and if you want to, you can hear the entire review again, 971talk.com/weekendreport or the 971 YouTube channel. Okay.
I'm going to stay in my lane now.
I want to dive back into a couple stories from this week. One thing I found interesting, we don't get to spend a lot of time on this, but I do find this very interesting. Sarah Sanders has all but officially began running for governor of Arkansas. She has launched what she's currently calling a personal website that looks a whole lot like
a campaign website.
She recently said that she feels called to serve the office of the governor of Arkansas, and Donald Trump has even publicly stated that he thinks she should run and that he thinks she would be a great governor. Sarah Sanders, do you think she's going to run, and do you think she's going to win?
I have met Sarah Sanders before she got famous. This was
like
2008, 2009. Oh, did you?
Before she got famous in the spin room after the St. Louis debate.
I remember that.
She was one of Trump's surrogates, yeah. And I got a chance to interview her. And at the time, everybody was gunning for Kellyanne Conway and Rudy Giuliani.
I remember
and
that.
Ben Carson. And Sarah Sanders was in the spin room and not getting hardly any attention, so it gave me a chance to have a really great talk with her, which that interview is still somewhere on the 97.1 YouTube channel. So while you're there looking at the movie review, you could dig back through the archives and you can find that somewhere. But she's I've met her personally and got a chance to talk with her. She's a pretty impressive person, everybody knows that.
I would, you'd have to say that Sarah is the hands-on favorite. Your father's the ex-governor. Donald Trump is going to be coming in campaigning for you. He used to work for the president. He's very popular in Arkansas, so of course she has to be the hands-on favorite. But my whole question, Tony, is what executive leadership experience does she have to be a governor or in that type of position? And that's, I think, is going to be her Achilles heel in this campaign. But overall, name recognition, the money, she's going to have all that, but she's going to have to somehow bulk up her resume and convince Arkansans that that she can be an executive leader.
Think she'll do it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do too.
I do.
I think.
Why not? I mean, she's a shoo-in.
Right. No.
Practically.
No, I agree. I think she will. I think she will absolutely win if she runs, and I think it's pretty obvious that she's going to run.
And Tony, a lot of the way that stuff goes, her father ran for president before, and we've had a president from Arkansas, and a lot of presidents come from governorships. So this may be the beginning of something far down the line where we see another Huckabee running for president in 10 years.
You could absolutely see that. Unfolding.
I thought I'd never say President Huckabee.
Right? Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, your favorite person, says that the policies and programs she supports should not be considered, quote, free stuff.
And that
people who receive these benefits or would receive these benefits if her policies and programs went into place are not being given anything. The people that would get the free stuff are not getting free stuff, they're not being given anything because they have earned and deserve all of those things. In fact, she went so far to say that she says that that people that call it free stuff are wrong and misleading, and she says that she never wants to hear the word free or the term free stuff ever again because it's just the media lying and misrepresenting her programs. And so she says, I never want to hear one of you reporters ask me about free stuff or use the word free again because it's You're just being mean.
You know, I'd have a question for, Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez.
Mm-hmm.
How did illegal aliens deserve and earn free college educations and free Medicare? How did they earn it?
Human rights.
Oh, okay.
I really think that would be her answer.
Because, you know, you're saying these people deserve and earn it. How do you deserve anything when you're not here illegal? Yep. When you're here illegally.
And she will just not engage now. If you call something free stuff or use the word free, you say these programs are going to give people free education, free health care, free whatever. She's just not going to engage.
You know what's scary?
She never wants to hear those terms again.
You know what's scary? I saw something that she was the top money fundraiser for the Democrats last quarter.
Oh, that doesn't surprise me one
bit. Of her, of she Nancy also, Pelosi, all of the people in leadership, she outraised them.
She also used a term that I had never heard before. She called Democrats that don't support her type of programs, the Green New Deal, you know, the whole Bernie Sanders, free everything, even though we're not allowed to use the word free. She called Democrats that don't support those programs neoliberals. Mm. And I had never heard the term neoliberals before, but she used it very derogatory and said, you know, all these neoliberals who don't believe that we should be giving away free, you know, they're wrong and I'm right. Neoliberals.
That doesn't make sense because neo means new. So you would think the neoliberals would be the progressives, not people that have common sense.
Like neocon.
But neocons are new conservatives. Neocons are people that used to be liberals and saw the light, like William Crystal and Krauthammer, who saw the light later and became Republicans. That's a neoconservative. So, I think a neoliberal would be a new liberal, a progressive.
Cool.
Yeah, that's what it is.
You know,
you know, she has an economics degree.
Well, so if we ever get her on the show, don't ask her about any programs that provide people free stuff because she won't dignify that statement.
Carl, have you gotten her yet?
I've put a call in.
Okay. You don't seem like you're really working that hard on that.
Earlier in the show, we talked about how president is gaining ground with the black vote, according to a couple of new polls that came out. More polling data this week showed that things are not going as well for Elizabeth Warren. Mm. She is plummeting in some of these polls. In the latest Quinnipiac poll, she was down 14% to 14%. So she had been at 28% and literally lost half of her support in this most recent poll, moving her down to third place. That Quinnipiac poll showed Joe Biden at 24% leading. Pete Buttigieg has moved ahead of Elizabeth Warren at 16%. Then you have Warren, who I mentioned is at 14%, followed closely by Bernie Sanders at 13%. A new CNN poll also shows Elizabeth Warren dropping into third place. All of the polls basically show that those are the only four candidates that matter. Those are the only four candidates that are in double digits, even close to being in double digits. And that's Joe Biden, Pete Buttigieg, Elizabeth Warren, and Bernie Sanders. Most people are blaming the Medicare for All push, that people are starting to, even Democrats are starting to be disenfranchised by the realistic possibility of this Medicare for All and the costs that are involved with it. And they say that, you know, her continue to push hard for Medicare for All is what is making her plummet so much in the polls. Do you think that Elizabeth Warren has seen her surge and is now fading away? And maybe maybe this is the beginning of the end?
You know, people that know me know one of my favorite books is The 48 Laws of Power. And in this instance, Elizabeth Warren broke law, I think it's 28, which says, quote, "Keep your words vague but full of promise." And I think she broke that law.
Giving away too many details?
Giving away too many details. She's been skating for a few months, Medicare for All. No one's going to have to pay for it. We're going to get the money from outer space. Everything's going to be great. And once she finally did
put a price tag on her plan, which was $20 trillion. Yep. That's when you've seen her support plummet like a screaming eagle.
She's been the darling and even considered by some to be the front runner for the last couple of months. Mm-hmm. Do you think that that is over with, and do you think that she can ever get back there again?
If the Democrats keep swinging towards moderate voters like Buttigieg and all them, she's done. I mean, once she put that price tag on her Medicare plan, Her supports have been dwindling.
Yep, that's what these polls show for sure.
Law 20-something.
Yeah, 28, you said. We got to take a break. When we get back, we are going to hear from Greg Keller from Torch Electronics about the electronic polling machines, the gambling machines in the state of Missouri and the controversy surrounding that. It was a conversation that we had yesterday when Chris was filling in for Annie on the Annie Fry Show. We're going to bring you that discussion next on the Weekend Report. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to 97.1 FM Talk. Tony Colombo, Chris Arps, Carl Middleman here with you. We mentioned a little bit earlier in the show that the three of us were all here yesterday, as well as Chris Arps was hosting the Annie Fry Show. Annie was out, so Chris was hosting. I was in with him for that entire show, and Carl was here as well. And we had a really interesting discussion with Greg Keller from Torch Electronics about the controversy surrounding the electronic slot machines, the gambling machines that are popping up all across the state of Missouri. So we are going to replay for you right now that discussion that we had with Greg. So check it out. Greg Keller from Torch Electronics talking with myself and Chris Arps from yesterday on the Annie Fry Show.
Our next guest is Greg Keller. Greg Keller is a spokesman for a company that is creating what I don't know if we call them slot machines or closely slot machines. My good friend Jim Gwinner is going to set this up for me.
Yeah, Greg, welcome to the show. Greg Keller is the head of Atlas Strategies. He is the former president of the American Conservative Union, the best head of hair in politics, and a very dear friend. So, Greg, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
And I have to admit that I worked with Greg and Senator Jim Talent's office back in the day.
The good old days.
The good old days when life was so much simpler.
Back when Chris had hair.
Exactly. I did have hair. It was receding, but I still had a little bit. Greg, talk about a little bit about what's going on. A couple of weeks ago, this is starting to be kind of a mini controversy where the gaming industry, of course, seems to be the main one that's against this. That they're saying that these quote-unquote slot machines are illegal. What do you say?
Well, we at Torch Electronics have a proprietary type of machine. We call them no-chance game machines that are completely legal by Missouri law and by Missouri statute. They adhere not only to the letter of the law, but the spirit of the law. The Missouri Gaming Commission themselves has said that in order for something to be a gambling device, it needs to be either a game of chance or a game of skill. We have proprietary software on all of our machines that are unlike any other machines being used across the state of Missouri. I think what's happening is that you see Jefferson City bureaucrats see an innovative company like Torch Electronics that builds a better mousetrap that adheres to the letter and the spirit of the law, but it makes bureaucrats mad because they aren't able to expand government regulation, government red tape, and costs upon Missourians. And they see our machines and our operators across the state, most of which are family-owned small businesses, and they see them as a good honeypot to get their fingers into, which bureaucrats like to do. And seems like it's going to be a discussion we're going to have in the legislature this year.
You know, the opponents of this say that the money from these machines aren't like the money from lottery and slot machines and casinos, that money goes to veterans affairs, it goes to education. What would you say to that argument?
Well, a lot of our machines, some of our best performing machines are actually giving money to veteran and other organizations. Many of our no-chance game machines are in VFW posts. They are in Eagles locations all over the state. I think the point here, Chris, is that according to Missouri law, our machines are legal. Now, if you like that, great. If you don't like that, then what you should do is go ahead and try to pass a bill through the Missouri legislature that expands regulation, expands government spending, expands red tape, and expands costs on Missourians. And let's have that discussion in Jefferson City. But what we shouldn't be doing is what the bureaucrats of the Missouri Gaming Commission are trying to do, which is just try to get their money, their hands on some money, whether they're entitled to it or not.
Greg, this is Jim. I can't imagine that, you know, here in St. Louis metropolitan area, and, oh, if you go down to the Elks Lodge down on Ladue Road, or you go down to the, like you said, the American Legion or the VFW or wherever these things might be, that there's that many people. I can't imagine this rising to the Gaming Commission or the casino's concern. I mean, this seems to be more about a, like you said, a money grab or a power grab. Do you see the legislature taking this up this session?
I think what we're seeing here, Jim, and I think you're exactly right on your point. I think what we're seeing is some competitors of ours in adjacent spaces using different kinds of machines think that we are horning in on their business. And what they have decided is that they want to use the long arm of the government and try to use government and the Missouri State Legislature to punish economically people who they see as their competitors. I think it's the worst of crony capitalism. And I think that free market conservative legislators in Jefferson City are going to see it for what it is, which is a cynical crony capitalist power and money grab.
Hey, Greg, this is Tony Colombo. Before we had you on in the last segment, I was talking about how, you know, around the country, if people haven't traveled around a whole bunch and they're just used to the way we do things here in the state of Missouri, you know, you can go to gas stations and truck stops and see a dozen video poker or video slot machines set up everywhere with chairs in front of them. And, you know, these types of machines are everywhere. Can you kind of describe exactly the type of machine that we're talking about? Are we talking about strictly slot machines? Are we talking about video poker machines? Like, what kind of gambling are we talking about? And if it falls into the, and then just follow that up with, if it falls into the letter of the law, what are they trying? What are your the people that are against this trying to claim? What law are they trying to cite? You know, that would make your machines illegal.
Well, the reason our machines aren't illegal is because, as the Missouri Gaming Commission themselves define it, it needs to be, like I said earlier, either a game of chance or a game of skill. Ours is clearly not a game of skill, because it's not like poker or something like that, where you're having to do a whole lot of math in your head. You're simply pressing a button. It's also not a game of chance, however, because our machines run off of a predetermined script. And I'm just going to give an example. It could say lose, 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 win, 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 lose, 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 win. So the outcome is predetermined before the person ever sits down at that machine. That differs from a video lottery machine, for instance, because those run off of random number generators and algorithms, so that when you sit down at the machine, you don't know the outcome. Furthermore, not only does ours run off a predetermined script, but every single time someone plays one of our no-chance gaming machines anywhere across the state of Missouri, there is a button on the interface that says, press this button if you want to find out if the next pull or roll, I'll call it, if you want to know if it's a winning or a losing play. And people who play our games have every opportunity to do that every single time they play. So it's not a game of skill and it's not a game of chance. What our competitors...
How popular is that button, Greg?
You know what's amazing?
I'd press that button every time.
You'd be amazed. I mean, what we found from our customers, and we have hundreds of machines across probably a couple dozen counties in Missouri, our average customer is a truck driver who's been on the road for six or 8 hours and just wants to sit down,
have a little fun,
play a game, and see if he or she is going to win. These are not hard, by and large, these are not hardcore gamblers. These are people who are just in off the road, play for a buck or two, and then get back along their way. I do think one thing I do want to highlight, though, is the majority of the people who operate the convenience stores in the locations in which we are in, particularly the convenience and gas stations, almost all of them are small family-owned businesses that work in an industry that has incredibly tight margins. I mean, along the lines of like a grocery store. I mean, 2-5% margins. Mm-hmm. And what our machines allow them to do is give Missourians a legal game to play that helps those mom-and-pop small businesses increase their margins in a very difficult industry. And it's been great for a lot of our operators, and our operators, frankly, want more of these rather than less because they've been so good for business and for economic development.
You know, when I was reading about this, one of the advantages it seems that you guys have, and people were saying this, is that, you know, these machines are close to their local stores, their gas stations. They'd rather go down the street to play these games instead of going to a casino.
Mm-hmm. That's probably true. What we have found, Chris, and I think that was Chris, what we have found is that we have had multiple instances, I mean, probably dozens of instances, where local police officers have come into our store. They say, we think this is an illegal gambling device. We're like, okay, you're wrong, but let's talk to the prosecutor about it. In every single instance where across the state of Missouri, where a local elected prosecutor has looked at our machines, inspected and investigated what our machines do and what they don't do. In every single one of those instances, after those local prosecuting attorneys have looked at our machines, they've reinstated our machines because they agree with what we say, which is that these are completely legal machines that are operating across our stores.
Greg, I want to thank you for coming on today and giving us some insight on this. Is there a website or you could direct people to that they could get more information?
Yeah, the name of our company is Torch Electronics. So you can go ahead and Google it and find more information there.
Greg, appreciate your time. Happy Thanksgiving, and stay out of the black crowds, Black Friday crowds, if you can.
Same to you guys. Take care.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
What do you think?
You know, I'd be curious, and I was going to ask him, but we ran out a little bit of time. I wonder if this issue is unique to the Big Brother mentality that regulators have in Missouri, it seems like. Are they happening in this other states? What's happening in other states that have similar gaming laws to what we do, not a Vegas or a...
Right.
Atlantic City, like New Jersey.
But with these machines, you can win money, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay. It's just,
And you can find out if you're going to win on the next play or not.
That's only good once. You only know what the next one's going to do.
I know.
And so you got to put money in to find out what the next one's
going
to do.
No, I get it. I get it, but I still love that.
Yeah, it's a very good way to...
keep you playing.
Yeah, to keep you playing, exactly. Very, very, very interesting. You're listening to the Annie Fry Show. This is Chris Arps on 97.1 FM Talk.
Idina Menzel has two really big songs. Olaf has one song about how things don't change. And then, of course, as soon as that song's over, everything in the world changes for them, which is great.
Right.
And Kristen Bell, you didn't know how great of a singer she was. The first one, First Time in Forever, you go like, is that Kristen Bell?
Right.
And then she's even stronger a singer in this movie.
Wow.
Welcome back to the Weekend Report, 97.1 FM Talk. And what you just heard right there was a little piece of the new movie review segment that we have on our YouTube page and on our show page at 971talk.com/weekendreport. We mentioned it earlier in the show. Every week going forward, our very own Carl Middleman, producer of the Weekend Report, who is also a member of the St. Louis Film Critics Association. And for people that have been listening to 97.1 for a long time, Carl was a part of the Max on Movies show, the Entertainment Rundown show. And so we've been missing that sort of movie review segment here on the station for the last couple of years. So we're bringing it back as part of the Weekend Report. And you'll be able to go to our page, 971talk.com/weekendreport, every week and check out Carl's latest movie review. And that was us talking about the music in Frozen 2. And
yes,
we did Frozen 2 and It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. We wanted to come out with our first movie review with two big ones. Mm-hmm. So you can go and check those out now on the 971talk.com YouTube channel on the Weekend Report playlist, or just go to 971talk.com/weekendreport, and you'll always be able to see the latest video that we have put up. And right now, the latest video is the movie review. So it's going to be fun.
Yes.
Carl, do you need a partner? Can we like Siskel and Ebert, Middleman and Arps?
No, that's all right. Thank you, though. Chris was questioning my bona fides. There are only 20 members in the St. Louis Film Critics Association, including our own Mark Reardon.
That's correct.
I thought Mark would be in there.
Yeah,
and Mark and I have talked. He's on TV, though,
Right.
Besides his Mark at the Movies segment that he does on Fridays.
Well, you have a face for radio, Carl.
Yes. Well,
I had to get that in.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm sorry.
Mark hates doing... I hate, he probably doesn't want me to say this, but the Great Day St. Louis thing that he does, he's like, I got to dress up. I got to know all my stuff. Because, you know, on radio, you can have all your notes in front of you, but on TV, you have to, because he's a guest. He's not one of the hosts. The hosts have everything on teleprompter.
Right, right.
And he has to know all of his stuff. And so.
Well, teach him what you did on our movie review. You actually taped your notes to the bottom of the tripod.
So I could look at them.
On the camera so
and
you could
still
see
didn't
the
matter.
Notes. Yeah, that's
because
exactly
one of the
right.
names was too small.
Right.
Huh?
But so we did Frozen 2, and we did It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Go and check out the full reviews, again, at 971talk.com/weekendreport or the 971 YouTube channel. And a little bit earlier in the hour when we were talking about this new feature, we were talking about the Mr. Rogers movie. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, again, you can get all the details on the movie review, but one of the things that we address is it's the marketing for this movie has been a little misleading.
Yeah.
So it kind of explain what we mean by that, Carl. Yeah.
It is not the story of Mr. Rogers. It is the story of this journalist played by Matthew Rhys from The Americans. And he is going through a crisis in his life, and he writes for Esquire magazine. Mm-hmm. Some of those things, those statements that I said,
right,
actually true, actually happened, but not the way that they show it on film. And his story, the journalist's story, is the focus of the film. Matthew Rhys is the star of the film. Tom Hanks as Mr. Rogers is a secondary character.
So it was basically the people
that blow your mind or what?
Well, is it basically they didn't think that this movie could sell just on that story?
No,
so we've got to add Mr. Rogers
on there
to
that was
get
a good
appeal.
Hook.
Well, they got the rights to that story, so they're going to use it as much as they can. And the documentary that came out last year, which is called "Won't You Be My Neighbor," which is my favorite film last year.
Okay.
And
that's the true Mr. Rogers.
That is the true
bio.
Mr. Rogers story.
Yeah.
That will make you cry like a little baby.
So I don't cry, Carl.
So this was.
Yeah, it will. No,
again,
like
Carl said, it's they change some of the major details they change.
Right.
But the elements of the, there's a,
and that
it's all
matter.
Based in true story that this guy who wrote for Esquire magazine
thought
years ago,
do a hit piece.
Yeah, was going to do an article about Mr. Rogers and sort of expose him for not being the saint and the perfect person that he portrayed on television. And he was going through personal issues, this columnist, and Mr. Rogers basically proved that he was this great guy and then kind of helped this guy through his issues. And that's what the story is about.
So people won't
too much.
No, that's fine.
Is that too much?
So
yeah.
People won't feel suckered. Like, hey, I thought I was coming in to see a Mr.
That's
Rogers movie, and you took me on a whole nother
exactly
tangent.
Exactly why you've got to watch the movie reviews that we do every week, because you'll learn things like that. And that doesn't mean, we don't, Carl will recommend it
I still recommend that movie.
Right.
It has a lot of flaws, one of them being you're being misled to why you should go see it.
Yeah,
but that doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad movie. It's just we want to make sure you understand what the movie is about. So you can
that might turn
decision.
Me off, though. Even if I enjoy the movie, I think I'd be a little turned off that I was kind of hoodwinked.
I certainly thought it was the story of Mr. Rogers after watching all
how
of
he was
those
a sniper in the Vietnam War.
Also not
that's
true.
What I heard it.
No, that's not true.
That's not true.
But they make fun of that in the film.
Oh, that's funny.
Yes.
That's funny.
I have a question, but I just can't
go.
Remember.
What
I can't remember what
it was.
Was
it about him being a sniper in Vietnam?
No,
and
it was something
urban
about Mr. Rogers, but it'll come.
Well,
back.
They do, and they also, watch the documentary. The documentary is so much better than this film.
Okay.
And also, if you saw the documentary, you will be disappointed by A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, because Won't You Be My Neighbor is so good.
Mm. So tell me this, Carl. Is Hanks, what's his first name?
Tom.
Is Tom Hanks going to be nominated for his 17th Best Actor Award for this movie, for this role?
Possibly, but the actors' categories are so strong this year, especially with the movie we're going to talk about next week, The Irishman by Martin Scorsese, which is now on.
As you mentioned, though, if he does get nominated,
it'll be for supporting actor.
It'll be for supporting actor, not because he's not the lead. Tom Hanks as Mr. Rogers is not the lead of the Mr. Rogers movie.
Carl.
Yes.
Give me an example.
Chris.
Give me an example, if there are, of any movies
in the past that have been like that, where you have a perception that it's a certain other movie, but when you get in there, it's something totally different, even though it's somewhat related to the title. Are there any other examples like that that you can think of offhand?
I'm sure there are, but there are a lot of movies that get kept under wraps, and so you don't, and a lot of, you should probably, I have a friend who does not see trailers at all because he wants to go in blind. He doesn't want to know anything about a film. And so if you're a person like that, that happens to you all the time.
Right. Yeah.
And so, but if you see trailers, you never know. Like, I thought you were going to go a different way. Have you ever had a main character that gets screwed? This is actually politics, because for a movie like, usually it's Quentin Tarantino movies, Django Unchained, Christoph Waltz won Best Supporting Actor.
Okay.
Because he was a lead in that movie, and they got him for Best Supporting Actor because they wanted Jamie Foxx. They didn't want Jamie Foxx and Christoph Waltz competing for Best Actor. And Christoph Waltz won. He was the lead in that movie, and he won Best Supporting Actor. That's going to happen this year again with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Brad Pitt is the lead of that movie, and they're pushing him for Best Supporting Actor. He is the lead.
Are there any rules about that? I always thought that Best Supporting Actor... I didn't think it was just
Leonardo
a
DiCaprio.
Call. I thought it had something to do with screen time and that. Or is it not?
I think the...
Are there no rules? They just kind of...
I think they make them up as they go along.
Yeah, right.
Leonardo DiCaprio is great in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, but it's Brad Pitt's movie. I would say maybe for screen time, it depends on screen time, and it's political, because you have to deal with the politics of Hollywood.
It seems like a film critic would be an excellent director or producer. Is that the case with...
Sometimes.
Because usually you hear them producing movies or criticizing movies, but I've never heard a film critic actually being like a producer or a director or anything.
Roger Ebert produced and wrote screenplays.
I did not know that.
Yeah, Beyond the Valley of the Dolls was his thing. And Brad Pitt has never won an acting Oscar, but he has a producing Oscar. When 12 Years a Slave won Best Picture, he
was involved with that.
His production company was behind that.
There you go. Make sure you check it out. This and
Carl's
now,
a fount of Hollywood movie.
And
that's why we're doing this.
That's why we're doing this. Yeah. So it's something that you could check out now and every week going forward. We'll have some fun, you know, as we get into the holidays too. We'll always review new movies, but we'll also talk about, you know, older movies and what you should watch at Christmas and that
tonight,
kind of thing.
Tonight, It's a Wonderful Life is on NBC.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Carl, can you clear something up? My wife loves...
There's a
20
rash.
Seconds.
Okay, my wife loves Spaceballs.
Yes.
Will you just agree with me that those are the worst? That's the worst movie ever made.
No,
I love Spaceballs.
Why would you hate Spaceballs? Yeah.
Because it's corny, and I hate Mel Brooks movies.
You have a predisposition going in.
Big time.
Check out the movie reviews this and every week at 971talk.com/weekendreport or the 971 YouTube channel. That's going to do it for this week's edition of the Weekend Report. For my partner, Chris Arps, our producer, Carl Middleman.
Hi.
I'm Tony Colombo. We will be back here next week with another edition of the Weekend Report. We thank you for listening, and enjoy the rest of your weekend. You're listening to 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 971talk.com. Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up. And the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.